Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. I'll make a bet most of you are unaware that March is Problem Gambling Awareness Month. Time to acknowledge the challenges of problem gambling. So we're going to welcome an expert on the subject, helping to remind individuals and families that hope and recovery are possible through Wheeler Health Network's Better Choice Gambling Treatment Program. Next, we'll have a great conversation with Connecticut's insurance commissioner about some of the things he's looking at as far as trends affecting the insurance products you might be paying for right now, and how his office is working with other states collaboratively to ensure folks are getting the best possible coverage for the rates they pay, no matter what kind of insurance they're getting. And we'll wrap up introducing a brand new member of our massive network of regional nonprofits, Filling in the Blanks, founded by mothers and community activists, which responds to 200 sites throughout Fairfield and Westchester counties, delivering over 2 million weekend meals to children in low-income households. We'll be back with these segments and guests and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Get ready to laugh out loud for a great cause as Homes for the Brave presents their highly anticipated 8th annual For Veterans, by Veterans Comedy Night, featuring three professional U.S. military veteran comedians who will perform to benefit veterans experiencing homelessness here in Connecticut. The event is coming up April 5th at Vizzano's Four Seasons in Stratford and includes a delicious dinner, exciting door prizes, and a 50-50 raffle, along with, of course, hilarious comedy for a good cause. For deets and tickets, just visit homesforthebrave.org/comedy. Well, as we indicated in the introduction, here we are smack dab in the middle of March. St. Paddy's Day, as a matter of fact, as this program plays. But normally when we're talking about maybe having a few pints and maybe enjoying some Irish food and a parade, we've got a very, very important subject to talk about. Picking up on a conversation that we had a few weeks ago, we are now here in the middle of Problem Gambling Awareness Month, and our guest this morning is from Wheeler's Better Choice Gambling Treatment Program. Katie Kirsch is one of those people who has more letters after her name than all of the letters in her name. So I'm just going to say, Katie, welcome. And please just tell us more about yourself and your background and what leads you to this critically important position of being the clinical supervisor for Better Choice.
Thank you, John. Yeah, the letters are, there's a lot. The ones that mean the most to me are the ICGC, which is the Internationally Certified Gambling Counselor certification that I hold. I've been in this work for just about 12 years now. My whole career has been dedicated to treating people who are struggling with gambling disorders as well as their family members. I grew up in southeastern Connecticut. I grew up around the casinos. I've been surrounded by it my whole life, and I've just always been drawn to studying and learning more about the addiction side of gambling. So I've been at Wheeler now for about 7 years, and I just absolutely love the work that I do. We get to help people all across the state of Connecticut every single day, and I couldn't feel more fortunate to do the work that I'm doing.
Yeah, that's great. And we've had such a great relationship with Wheeler Health and all of the great work that you're doing around mental health and addiction services. In fact, the Better Choice Gambling Treatment Program is funded in great part through Connecticut's Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. And it's great that we're sort of more in a place now than maybe we were at the start of your career, where drug addiction, substance abuse, alcoholism, we're beginning to be more of a society that is coming to grips with this as a public health concern and not a personal failing to be stigmatized and have fingers wagged at, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think you can't talk to a single person in the state of Connecticut who doesn't know someone or has personally been impacted by gambling disorders, whether that be themselves or a parent or a child or a friend, a coworker. You know, the reality is that gambling is legal and most people do it and most people don't have a problem with it. You know, it's the same things we see with alcohol, but it is not a behavior that doesn't have any risks involved. It can actually be extremely dangerous for a percentage of the population. And those numbers estimate about 50,000 people in the state of Connecticut have a gambling disorder. It's with the availability that we now have and the access that we have. I mean, everybody has a smartphone and most people have computers and you can just access gambling 24/7 now, which is only going to create more problems in our state. It's not just a financial issue that we're seeing. You know, people are coming in with higher rates of anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, physical health problems. You know, they're not taking care of their physical health. They're not going to doctor's appointments. They're not visiting the dentist like they should be. They're unable to sustain a healthy lifestyle when gambling becomes the forefront.
So growing up in southeastern Connecticut, you experienced the before and the after of the inundation of the casinos that are housed there. The subtle changes in our schools and our neighborhoods and our communities. But even as recently as this week, we're hearing on news networks about new apps that are becoming available in states that are permitting them, that are allowing people to use their phones and computers to buy lotto and lottery tickets. I have to believe that when you finally, you and your colleagues in this business finally heard that Connecticut was going to begin permitting legal gambling using mobile devices and computers, you know, that had to be like, you know, like the Russian army was coming, you know, that had to be like maybe one of the most galvanizing moments of your career battling problem gambling.
Yeah, you know, historically, it's always been, okay, what's coming next? What can we anticipate is going to be the next thing that we have to be prepared for as treatment professionals in order to help people struggling with gambling? And, you know, with sports betting becoming legalized, we put all of our focus and efforts into learning all about it and understanding it and the ways that we can help people. And then it became online casinos are now the new thing. So we had to, you know, again, do more research and figure out the best way to help people and how can we protect, you know, the residents in Connecticut and across our country. And now knowing about iLottery coming, it's just another thing that we're, you know, we keep saying, well, what's next? We thought we've seen it all and the hits kind of keep coming.
Yeah, at least Disney's not getting in on the action, right? Wait, what? Oh, Disney is getting in on the gambling action. That's another just big cement block over the head of you and your colleagues, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, we are, I guess, always surprised and never surprised at the same time at, you know, the way that everything is just becoming saturated with opportunities to gamble. And, you know, what we know is if things are accessible and available, people are going to do that. You know, they're going to play those games. They're going to participate in this behavior. They're going to consume a product that's available to them. So The more we have, the more we're going to have more problems. And that's just sort of the bottom line.
Well let's turn our conversation to prevention at the earliest possible opportunity. Certainly with, you know, the attractive visual and engaging electronic components of computer and mobile device gambling, and the fact that even the Disney company is beginning to enter into the picture. Let's talk about the youngest victims of problem gambling and how those who love them can recognize problems developing. I mean, you know, in middle school, in elementary school. I mean, I was in seventh or eighth grade when back in the mid-70s when somebody was circulating football cards and I was able to win $5 or $10 if I checked all the right boxes. But I mean, where can you begin in terms of the person's age to be able to really make a difference in prevention?
Well, you know, it starts, of course, very, very young. There's so many things that kids have access to now that simulate gambling and that essentially are gambling behaviors in terms of video games that they're playing. The opportunities to gamble inside of those video games are becoming so, so vast. It's sort of hard to keep up with that. So, you know, the conversations need to start happening at a very, very young age. You know, even Pokemon cards. I have a 7-year-old and 11-year-old, and one loves Pokemon cards and one loves video games. So I'm constantly having conversations, and I'm constantly trying to have them teach me what it is that they like about the Pokemon cards. What do you like about trading? What does it do for you to open a pack of Pokemon cards and get a rare high-value card in that pack? What does that mean, and what are the real odds? It's always talking about, with kids, the reality of these things. Sure, it's nice to win something, to feel lucky, but what are the real odds in what you're doing? And that's not real life. And making sure that kids don't internalize these wins that they get, or if they're purchasing loot boxes and they get a rare weapon or a skin in a game, that they don't internalize that as if they did something good. Because that's what really gambling comes down to, is about the feelings that it provides a person, whether it's a boost to their self-esteem or their ego. It makes them feel important or special, right? All of those feelings that we should be getting, and we should be getting validated in other areas of our lives. People are drawn to those feelings. Go ahead.
I was going to say, not to hit people with a lot of complex concepts early on a Sunday morning conversation, but talk more about the chemistry that you inadvertently were referring to when you are of a makeup of an individual who gets a jolt out of winning something in a gambling situation.
Yeah, so that winning can really mean so many different things to different people. So whether you are working at a job that's not necessarily fulfilling, or you feel like you're not as successful as your family and friends, and you might have lower self-esteem or self-worth or self-confidence, and you experience a win on any gambling device or platform, any game that's out there. Yeah, it's going to feel like, wow, I am important. I am worthy. I am feeling validated with this game. This game is telling me I'm a good person. Mm-hmm. And so it does get really deep when we get into the clinical setting and we get into therapy. We kind of talk about really, it's a maladaptive behavior, right? It's what are the things that it's giving you that you're not getting in your day-to-day life?
Yeah. Well, as we mentioned earlier, one of your big partners is DEMAS here in Connecticut, the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. They seldom back a loser, if you'll excuse the pun. But in terms of Wheeler's Better Choice Gambling Treatment Program, let's talk a little bit about that and why it is experiencing the level of success and sustainability that it has since its inception.
Well, Connecticut has the most unique treatment structure for gambling disorders in the entire country. No other state has the treatment that we have, and that could not be possible without the support of DEMAS. We have five specific gambling treatment programs in Connecticut. So we are just one of five, but we all work so closely with each other, and we all operate the same ways. So we're constantly, helping people in Connecticut get to the closest treatment location to them. And we have such a good team in Connecticut. I couldn't be more proud to be a part of it. And so we focus our entire careers to helping people through advocacy, prevention, you know, marketing strategies, letting people know we do exist. There is help for you. We feel like we're helping a population that is wildly underserved in our country. And I think the need couldn't be more great at this point in time.
What alternatives to gambling are individuals who have come out of the addiction and are maintaining their, you know, their gambling sobriety, so to speak? What are some of the alternative activities that are available to them that, you know, kind of much like maybe, you know, methadone or other, you know, chemical substances or pharmaceutical substances are helping individuals with, you know, chemical substance abuse problems. Is there any similar alternative available for individuals who have been addicted to gambling, but who are successfully maintaining their distance from it?
Well, there has been some research done for a medication called naltrexone, which is used to help treat urges and cravings for other substances, but has been shown to be effective for people struggling with gambling. So there are, you know, medication options. It doesn't work for everybody, but there's definitely that piece of it. You know, recovery for our clients is really about helping them just get their life back and get back to the things they used to enjoy and the things that they used to love. We have, you know, Gamblers Anonymous in Connecticut, which is a great resource. You know, there's lots of things we do, like I said, just to get people, you know, back to their regular lives and back to enjoying what they used to enjoy before they started gambling.
Oh, that's great. Before we let you go, is there anything else that you can say to individuals who know that they are deeply rooted in a gambling addiction, or to their loved ones or friends or coworkers who may be kind of witnessing the unraveling sweater in a much more disturbed mm-hmm. fashion?
Mm-hmm. You know, what I want people to really know is that you are not alone. You know, this addiction makes people feel very alone. They think that they're the only ones going through it, but you're certainly not. There's thousands and thousands of people who are struggling with the same thing, and there are professionals out there who understand this addiction and can help you. It's, getting into treatment is one of the easiest things to do in Connecticut. It starts with just calling the Connecticut helpline, speaking to someone right away. They will direct you to the treatment location closest to you, and you will be guaranteed to work with people who understand gambling disorders and are trained to treat it.
Fantastic. Katie Kirsch heads up Wheeler's Better Choice Gambling Treatment Program, one of a handful of programs throughout the state of Connecticut, which is the preeminent state in the entire country in terms of providing support for individuals with a gambling addiction or gambling issues. If you'd like to know more about that program, you can go to Wheeler, that's with an H, wheelerhealth.org/BettorChoice, B-E-T-T-O-R, choice, and they will be ready to help you. Katie, thank you so much for the information this morning. Folks, here we are in March. March is Problem Gambling Awareness Month. If you or someone you know or love has a problem gambling concern, now's the time to get the help you need. Once again, wheelerhealth.org/BetterChoice. Katie, thank you again for your time this morning. Well, we don't often get a chance to talk to our state commissioner of insurance, but his fantastic authoritative radio voice is with us on the line this morning. Commissioner Andrew N. Emmaus is with us, and we've got some exciting news. I mean, everybody somewhere at some time gets some sort of insurance project product. And in Connecticut, a lot of the regulation, virtually all the regulation around the insurance products that serve you, your business, your car, your family, even your concert tickets, for crying out loud, they in all likelihood have some oversight from Commissioner Mayes and his team at the Connecticut Department of Insurance. So Commissioner Mayes, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you, John. It's great to be here. Looking forward to talking to you. And it's great to have you and to have you invite me to talk to your audience, because I think it's very important here in the state for the word about insurance and its insurance to us as both consumers and as a state to be distributed.
Yep. I literally, the last thing I got before we picked up the phone this morning, I went on the internet and bought a pair of concert tickets for a favorite artist that's coming into the area. And before they even let me buy the tickets, they asked me about buying insurance for them. So I was reminded about how almost anything that you want to acquire or own, you may have the opportunity to buy some sort of insurance on. But one of the other things that is certainly on the minds of a lot of people, for good or ill, is artificial intelligence. And I understand the Connecticut Insurance Department has announced the release of a bulletin addressing the use of artificial intelligence systems by insurers licensed to do business in Connecticut. Tell us what we need to know as consumers about bulletin number MC25.
It's pretty easy. What you need to know is that the bulletin is designed to protect consumers from the unethical use of artificial intelligence. And that is not to say that any companies are using it unethically. Let's put that out there right away. But let's make sure that as we use AI, as we use technology to innovate, that use is consistent with what we expect from our customers or from the companies, and consistent with how we expect our consumers to be treated. So we've got a whole bunch of items in that notice. Companies know what they're supposed to do. There has to be transparency. There can't be discrimination. There are so many items, you know, that are possible when you're using AI that may not necessarily have happened or may not have gone or would not have gone unnoticed if you have people normally in the loop. But when you have AI, part of a concern is that you could have a black box that nobody knows what's going into that box. We want to make sure that what goes in is right and fair to consumers, and certainly that what comes out is fair to consumers. You know, I can give you one quick item to show that it's not necessarily a question of intent, but there's that story from a few years ago. Amazon was trying to hire network engineers, I think it was, and what they did was they used an AI program, machine learning, to try and search through their resumes, and consistent with the successful network engineers they had, well, it turned out somebody noticed that there were no women in the list that the AI was spitting out. And what happened was that nobody had realized the AI was learning from the people they'd already hired, and those people were overwhelmingly male. That happens. We have a society where there could be bias. We want to make sure consumers are fairly treated, consumers understand everything that happened to them and the process of getting insurance.
Hmm. So across your network nationally of state officers and others who have oversight over insurance providers, have you heard of any concerns or nightmare scenarios that have occurred elsewhere, or are there any things that consumers need to look for or listen for or watch out for when they're interacting either on an app or on a phone call or through their internet service with an insurer?
Well, we always have concerns. That's why. That's how we try to avoid the disasters down the road. You know, in insurance, we're all about risk management. You're not going to find people that are more into risk management than regulators. We want to make sure that we see as much as possible everything, all the possible outcomes, and that we're narrowing it down so that consumers are protected. Consumers, I think first and foremost, you have to know whatever entity, whatever medium you're using, whether it's the internet, whether it's a telephone, whether it's person to person sitting in an office, that the person you were speaking to is licensed, or the organization that you were dealing with is licensed to sell insurance, because that means they had to meet certain standards and that they are regulated by the relevant regulatory authority in whichever state they are. Easy to find that out. You can call your state insurance department, the Connecticut Insurance Department. You can email us. We will help you with that. That is probably the single most important thing you can do. Now, on the other side, if you have a concern with a claim or if you don't understand your pricing and the insurance company is not explaining it to you, reach out. We have a consumer affairs division, certainly at the Connecticut Insurance Department, that is there to help you. They will work with you. They will make sure that you were treated fairly, and they will make sure you understand whatever happened and why it happened.
Very good. If folks want to learn more about this or anything else that Commissioner Mayes and his team do at the Connecticut Insurance Department, you can go to portal.ct.gov/CID. Or if you have a query, you can send an email to insurance@ct.gov or call their consumer affairs helpline at 860-297-3900. One of the other important things that we wanted to talk to the commissioner about this morning was the fact that Commissioner Mayes recently announced the 2024 National Association of Insurance Commissioners, or NAIC, strategic priorities. This is a system of state-based insurance regulations that the NAIC serves as the U.S. standard-setting organization for insurance regulation. So, Commissioner Mayes, let's turn our attention to these priorities the ones that you think are top line, because you have heard of incidents here in Connecticut where issues may be happening occasionally or even frequently.
Okay, thanks, John, because this is, and let me just give you a little bit more background on the National Association of Insurance Commissioners and on state insurance regulation. For more than 150 years in this country, insurance has been regulated by the states. We are the primary regulators of insurance, and aside from a few particular places, we are the only regulators of insurance companies. Now, there's a reason for that. It's because we feel that, and states feel, that the state regulatory system is closest to the consumer. So in Connecticut, I have a better idea what's important to Connecticut consumers than the commissioner in California, and mm-hmm. vice versa.
Sure.
Now, that's not all, though, but we do need a national system so we can share info, we can trust each other, we can trust companies operating across boundaries. And that's why, again, probably a little over 150 years ago in New York, we had the first meeting for the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. 56 regulators, 50 states, District of Columbia, and the five territories. And every year we get together at the start of the year and we look at what we consider the top regulatory, the top strategic priorities. We look at our markets, we see what's affecting the markets, and these are the priorities that we want to focus on. And yeah, these priorities are all equal in our mind. There is nothing, there's no particular order. I'm just going to go in and pick out a few of them as I go forward.
Perfect.
And one that's certainly close here in Connecticut is climate risk, natural catastrophes, and resiliency. Now, it almost goes without saying what we've seen over the past few years. The climate has been, I'm not sure if stressed is the word that you want to use, but there certainly is a risk that's been associated with climate changes. We've got more extreme weather events happening more often, And in Connecticut, that is of particular importance. And it's actually, if you look at the website for NOAA and when they predict what global warming will do to sea level, you know, it disproportionately affects the East Coast. And in Connecticut, almost 2/3 of our insured property is right there in that danger zone there to the water. So what do we do? Bunch of things. One is we need to know what's happening, because if you hear those ads for the financial advisors, they tell you past performance is no guarantee of future results. Insurance is an industry that has long relied on the data that what happened before to predict what will happen next. But we know with natural catastrophes, with climate change, things are changing so rapidly that we have to figure out a new way to look. We have to figure out a new way to assess the risk. So what we have in the NAIC, we have a think tank called the Center for Insurance Policy and Research. And one of the things we're looking at are the various models, the really advanced models that are being used to model climate change and its effects. Does two things. One is that, you know, we have to look and see if the models are correct. And two, we have to look and see what the impact is on consumers so that the risks are being properly priced, so a consumer is not being charged too much, in which case they can't, you know, they've got unaffordable insurance, sure, or too little, in which case an insurance company is not going to be able to cover the risk, which is just as bad, you know, if something happens. As insurance regulators, we focus on solvency and market conduct. We need to make sure companies can pay whenever that event happens, whether it's tomorrow or 50 years down the road. And to do that, we have to know the risk. So we've created a center of excellence to model that. We just recently and announced a data call on property insurance nationwide at the zip code level, so we can see where the gaps lie in each of our own jurisdictions. We're creating a national climate resilience strategy for insurance, because if you look at, you know, if you listen to all the climate scientists, they will tell you there are three reactions, progressive reactions to climate change and to the increasing risk: mitigation, adaptation, migration. Where we are now is in the mitigation stage, resiliency actions, and we need to be able to provide consumers with the ability to do these, to undertake these resiliency actions, and to make sure that those actions are recognized by the insurance companies in their in the premiums they charge. And, you know, resiliency can be something as easy as using hurricane nails in your roof. It makes a huge difference. But, you know, this is one item that certainly is close to home in Connecticut. If we increase mitigation, if we increase the resiliency, we will also see more companies able to cover the property in the state. We want to make sure that property insurance is available and affordable in the state. All ties into the climate strategy.
Commissioner, we're going to take a quick break. Folks, stick with us. We're going to be back to talk a little bit more about all the insurance that may impact you and your family and your household with the Commissioner of Connecticut's Department of Insurance, Andrew Mays. Stay with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this. Hey, if you live in Greater Bridgeport and you want to access the freshest, most healthy, and least expensive vegetables, herbs, and more, just grow it yourself. Green Village Initiative has just opened up community gardener applications for 12 Bridgeport gardens, and you have a chance to be part of this very locally homegrown program. Or maybe you'd prefer to be a GVI volunteer. There's plenty to do and plenty in store for 2024 with GVI. So get your hands in the dirt and head for their website to get signed up now at gogvi.org. Yeah, Commissioner Mace, I was going to say, I was happy to see that one of these priority points is also addressing race and insurance, including financial inclusion and protection gaps. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left, so I just wanted to let you know we can touch on.
I get really excited.
Oh no,
I'm one of these weird people.
No, the climate issue is, we are being barraged with so much detail on the effects of climate change, it takes an authority to cut through the white noise and make known why it's so important to us right here in our own Connecticut neighborhoods, and especially along the shoreline and along waterways. So super important, especially based on the history that we've had in the past decade with all these like super storms and things that we've been weathering here. So on to the subject of race and insurance.
Race and insurance, financial inclusion, and protection gaps. And I will tell you that the NAIC, if we go back to George Floyd and COVID, those exposed some of the fissures in society, and those certainly exposed some of the fissures in insurance coverage, which is when the NAIC created what we call a special executive level committee. So it's all just the top regulators called the Special Committee on Race and Insurance. And we know that change is not going to come overnight, but we also know that change must come for a number of reasons. A, it's good business. You want to make sure that you sell, for the industry, you get the products out to the people who need it. The flip side is people need access to the products. There can't be barriers. They have to have products that are affordable to them, that are relevant to them. And how do you help that happen? A, you have to make sure that your own workforce, if you're an insurance company or a regulator, or if you're an agency or a broker, that your own workforce adequately represents the community that's out there. That's the way we break down barriers. That's the way we increase trust. You know, I will give you one example here in Connecticut that's related to insurance, and it has to do with Access Health Connecticut, which is the exchange program in Connecticut. And during COVID, we saw how distrust of the medical community was hindering access to care. And that not only hurt the individuals who weren't getting access, it hurt society, hurt everybody. So what they did was they created what they called a broker program, Broker Academy. They reached out into affected communities. They got people from those communities that Access Health trained who now go back into those communities. And so that means two things. One is they're reaching people who might not otherwise be reached, increasing the health and access to insurance and health for us all. And they're also creating good businesses, spreading the wealth, sharing the wealth. You know, when I say it, we do good. We do well by doing good here. That's what I'm thinking of. You know, this is the NAIC. We created the New Avenues to Insurance Careers Foundation, which just recently awarded its first scholarship to a Troy University student. We're going to be doing a lot more of that. You know, and certainly each state in its individual way has to do that. Mm. In Connecticut, one of the items we're focusing on is education, which we're fortunate in Connecticut, a law was passed last year that will enable education in high schools for our students. We have to make sure everybody has a piece of the pie.
Great. Well, you did a great job in covering concerns regarding AI by insurers and cyber risk at the top of the program when talking about the localized bulletin. So we'll leave that advice to stand and wrap up our chat this morning talking about the other NAIC priority that you're focusing on and other oversight folks all over the country, and that is the marketing of insurance products. What do we need to know about that?
And we have a problem with that one, and that we don't have authority. You'd mentioned at the top of the program how we have authority over almost all insurance. What we do not have authority over is a Medicare Advantage program. Mm. We regulate the companies, but we don't have authority over the marketing. And what we've seen over the past few years has been a significant increase in deceptive and misleading insurance marketing. And it annoys me more than anything because it's largely targeted to a population. You know, these are people that are 60s. Beyond 65, the older population, among the most vulnerable. And you know, they're seeing these ads on TV that are just wrong. And they think they're getting coverage that they don't have. And they find out when they need it that they don't have that coverage. Mm-hmm. So we as regulators have been doing, you know, we've been trying to address this in a number of ways. One is we've gone to Congress and we will keep going to them to say, listen, we know that CMS does not have enough resources to address this. These people are coming to us as state insurance regulators and saying, help us, and we can't. Give us the authority. We're not asking for money. We're asking for authority to help consumers. That's what we want from CMS. And then there are other issues that we're addressing. You know, so we have, as I mentioned, the agent, the broker search, the consumer insurance search services. You can check the licenses. You can make sure these are real people that are actually licensed to do business in your state. And we are going to look at the regulatory powers that we don't have, but I think we should have, over what we call lead generators. Again, this is going to help consumers. It's going to help close the protection gap for older adults. And to do that, again, now that I have you here and I have the megaphone, I'm going to call once again for Congress to restore states' regulatory authority over the Medicare Advantage market so we can use our resources to protect our parents.
Connecticut Insurance Department Commissioner Andrew Mayes speaking with us this morning about a number of important topics related to the work he and his team are doing at the Connecticut Insurance Department. If you need to reach the department, you can contact them via email at insurance@ct.gov, or you can call the Consumer Affairs Helpline if you have questions about an insurance product. That number is 860-297-3900, and you can start researching any issues that you may have or concerns or advocacy you may want to reinforce through the department by visiting their website, portal.ct.gov/CID. Commissioner Mayes, thank you so much for all the time and great information this morning. We wish you well in all your endeavors, and to your team, thank you so much again for your time this morning. All right. Well, first and foremost, as we wrap up the program this morning, St. Patty's Day, I've got a couple of brand new friends to the award-winning For the People who are friends of a friend. And thank you to radio personality Danny Lyons for introducing me to the voices on the phone this morning. Shawnee Knight and Tina Kramer are with me. They are mothers and community activists and co-founders of a nonprofit called Filling in the Blanks. They wanted to marry their love of community, children, food, and charity. And a little over a decade ago, they created Filling in the Blanks, which has since expanded to include over 200 sites throughout Fairfield and Westchester counties. Hello, Westchester County. And they have delivered, get this, over 2 million weekend meals to children in low-income households. So I guess the first question I want to ask Shawnee and Tina, who's got the big kitchen?
Yeah. That's what people think. We have this, we're working outside of our home or a small closet, but we actually have a 7,500 square foot warehouse in Norwalk, Connecticut. It's a mini Costco that we're operating.
Mm. So let's flash back to 2012, 2011, where did you first start to see a need that you felt your passions, talents, and dedication could maybe possibly address?
Well, we had learned from a friend that when her son was going to some of his, you know, sporting events on the weekends, kids from some of the other neighboring towns where they were, you know, playing weren't coming with the snacks and with food. And so the teams were bringing them extra food. And it really got us thinking, you know, we're moms, we have kids. We sat on all those fields packing the snacks for our kids. And when we kind of heard there were other kids in need that really just didn't even have some of the basic, you know, necessities of food, we started doing a little research and learned there were 32,000 children in Fairfield County, I mean, in our backyard, that would go home on the weekends and not have enough food or any food.
How did you find each other and then make a decision to, put your heads together and get to work feeding these kids on the weekends?
So Shawnee and I were neighbors, and we really wanted to do something, like Shawnee said, to help the kids in our neighborhoods. So with the help of our friends and family, we started serving 50 kids at one school, actually out of our home. We were tying grocery bags and going to the dollar store and such to purchase the food items and delivering the bags right out of the trunks of our cars. And that was back in 2013. And now, you know, you fast forward to 2024, 11 years later, we have multiple trucks. We have 3 trucks, drivers, the warehouse, like I said, and 7,500 kids we're delivering to for 200 sites.
So tell us about your team. It's not just the two of you anymore. It sounds like you got quite a group there who are also putting their shoulders to the wheel to do more for these hungry kids on weekends.
Yeah, we have a fabulous team. We have, you know, 11 paid employees, so it's a small staff, but we have, you know, over 7,000 volunteers that help us pack these bags, because there's no way, you know, the 11 staff and Tina and I could pack 7,500 bags a week. So we, you know, we have volunteers from all ages and all walks of life come and help us at our warehouse do these packing events. And it's great team building. It's great, you know, camaraderie, we play music, it's a lot of fun, and we have just a really strong network of volunteers.
So maybe people who are listening or have heard about you or wonder, what about summertime? What about when school's not in session? And I see from your website, fillinginTheBlanks.org, that the action doesn't end when the school shuts down for the summer. You're in summer programs and camps and other community gathering spots, keeping the kids fed on the weekends.
Yes, that's correct. It was important for us to keep the consistency throughout the year. Many of our students in the program during the school year are also in camps that we serve. So we want to make sure that we are creating a food secure environment for these children all year round. And the summer is actually the hardest time because the breakfast and lunch programs that are available at school during the week are not available at most summer camps. So we're doing, you know, our part to make sure we're filling in the weekend gap for the meal programs.
And I got to imagine now with over a decade of doing good the way Filling in the Blanks does it, you may have had kids that were getting one of those bags out of the trunks of your car back in 2013-14 who maybe is volunteering or even working for you now.
Yes, we definitely have volunteers that were recipients. We have some volunteers that are recipients currently. It's really great. People can give back no matter what they have. You can always give something, even if it's your time, or it doesn't, you know, even though they're receiving, they still also want to sometimes help.
Sure.
Yes, and example of that is we just started our new initiative, the Fresh Food on the Move Mobile Pantry, which distributes over 22,000 pounds of food at each site. We have 2 sites per month, one in Norwalk and one in Stamford. And at those sites, our volunteers actually do receive the food from the pantry, and some of them have kids in the program as well. So it's the perfect example of volunteering, giving back your time, and also, you know, unfortunately, they are in need at this moment, so they are getting the bags of food from us as well.
Right, but as the saying goes, sometimes your best advocates are your customers, and in this case, I'm sure it does a lot to reduce or even hopefully eliminate the stigma of going to a mobile food pantry like you guys operate and encountering the people who are working to give you that food as being in the same shoes as the recipients. You know, having that peer-to-peer experience, I'm sure, helps a lot of people who really, really need the nourishment and the food and the nutrition to be less inclined to stay away because of the stigma.
Yes. I mean, the mobile pantry is definitely more of a community engagement experience where I think, you know, it's a dignified, people feel dignified coming there. We see the same people, you know, it's become kind of like a little community. It's really nice to see. Yes. And they trust us in the community because we do have, as you were saying, people that live in the Norwalk and Stamford community helping out at the pantry. So they see familiar faces working with filling in the blanks, and the stigma kind of is just completely decreased. And then we're also working with Stamford Health, and we're working with them for health and wellness services at the pantry. So we're also providing opportunities such as flu shot clinic. We have given out COVID tests. We have had Husky Dental and Husky Health Insurance registering people.
Wow.
So it's a safe place for people to meet with these different services. And it's like Shani said, just a great community event and engagement program that we've started there.
Very good. Well, fillingintheblanks.org is your website. Folks can go there to learn about your organization. They can see all of the various sites and partnerships you have. Folks can register for meals there and find different ways that they could help. One of those ways is through a really cool activity that you guys have coming up. And folks, it should be brought to your attention that 99% of the food that that Filling in the Blanks provides to their thousands and thousands of children is purchased. So these fundraising events that they do help provide the funding they need to feed these kids. Their Unite to Fight Childhood Hunger Walk is coming up on Sunday, April 7th. So, guys, I'll let you fill in the blanks. Let folks know what they need to know to participate in the Unite to Fight Childhood Hunger 5K Run and Walk.
Yeah, so they can, like you said, visit our website, fillingintheblanks.org, to learn about all the events we have. You'll find a link there where you can register for the 5K. You can even create your own fundraising team and set a goal. And then you can just come out and run or walk with us. It's no pressure. People come with their babies and strollers. They come with their dogs. It's Sunday, April 7th at Waveney Park in New Canaan, Connecticut. And I would encourage everyone to come and join us.
Excellent. Filling in the Blanks fights childhood hunger by providing children in need with weekend meals. If you can help them, they can help more kids in more neighborhoods throughout Fairfield County and Westchester County. Fillingintheblanks.org is their website. Their co-founders are neighbors, Tina Kramer and Shawnee Knight, and they were kind enough to come together to talk with us here on the award-winning For the People this morning. Guys, I can't wait to talk to you again and hopefully get involved a little bit more with the work that you're doing. I'm looking forward to talking to you soon, and thank you once again for all the work that you do for the kids down in Fairfield and Westchester counties.
Yeah.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.